This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Hi listeners, this is Brent Sutton. Welcome to Season 4 and the 88th episode of the Practice of Learning Teams podcast show. On today's show, we're going to start a bit of a three-part series with Cameron Stevens, who is a safety technologist and safety futurist. Cameron's really lucky because he's also a qualified and chartered health and safety professional. And he's got extensive experience in developing technologies to improve the design experience and safety of work for enterprises across the world. Cameron is also the founder of the Safety Innovation Academy, where he coaches technology and safety teams to improve digital literacy, develop digital safety strategy, enable safety technology transformation. This was a really interesting chat we had with Cameron with my colleague Brent Robinson, because I think there is a direct connection between the new view of safety and how safety tech can help us on our journey of learning from everyday work, but more importantly, creating systems that focus on successful everyday work in that positive lens rather than that negative lens. So please sit back and enjoy this podcast with myself, Brent Robinson, and Cameron Stevens. Well, hi, listeners. Today, I'm actually really lucky. I've got Brent Robinson joining me from Melbourne, and a super special guest. We've got Cameron Stevens, who basically is a bit of a futurist and technologist, and also one of the country managers for Lenovo and the great work that they're doing in augmented reality and virtual reality. So welcome, Cameron, to the show.
Thanks very much, Brent.
Excellent. So, look, we see quite a bit of you on LinkedIn, and we see quite often that you are talking about particularly the application of technology in certain elements of the new view of safety. And I thought this was a great opportunity to get you on and just talk to a wider audience about some of the values and some of your learnings you've had around using technology in that. And you probably would have seen a few weeks ago, we did a post where we were showing the use of augmented reality with a group of workers, where the organization was putting in place a series of new machine, new equipment. And their traditional approach would be do a series of hazard IDs, engineers would build it, and basically, whatever we didn't think of, we'll then create some administrative controls around it so that workers can deal with it. In this case, we used that AR technology so that workers could see what was the intent of design. But more importantly, rather than asking the workers what were the hazards, we got the workers to use the 4Ds of dumb, different, difficult, and dangerous for them to explore that. So what are your thoughts in that space, particularly with this type of technology with VR and AR?
Yeah, look, the biggest benefit from, so first of all, the shift that we're seeing in with these AR and VR technologies is a shift from viewing flat media in two dimensions. So that's how we would typically interact if you're doing something remotely, like what we're doing right now, just looking at each other in a 2D interface. We're moving from viewing flat media in the third person to three-dimensional media in the first person. And the reason why we're doing that is because we're able to get far more context to the decisions that we're making, and we're also able to get a level of presence. So that's if we're doing things remotely. What you've done in relation to augmenting the real world is you're providing the ability in real time, in situ, the ability for real time contextual decision making. So people think in different ways. perhaps engineers are going to be more likely to understand things in three dimensions. Maybe someone from finance and procurement may not be able to think in that way, and different individuals will have preferences around that. So even being able to just determine, is the height suitable from an ergonomics perspective, to be able to view that from a 2D flat media interface is very difficult. Whereas if you are in the workplace and being able to see a three-dimensional asset before it's fabricated, it makes perfect sense. So I think we'll see far more of that. But the basics are the context element of risk. So all risk discussion needs to start with context. And that's what you're doing. You're providing more color, clarity, dimension to the context of the risk decisions that you're making. So that's what I think.
And I think the thing that we got out of it was, and particularly the organization, was the participation levels increased with the, you know, we've got frontline teams looking at it, getting it and going, hey, you know, that forklift, it's way too close. If it pivots around, and it's just things you would not see on a 2D drawing, particularly, and a 3D model by itself, you won't see that because it's not, to your point, Cameron, it's not the context of the rest of the things going around in that particular space. What I loved about it was just we're using ubiquitous technology. You know, we're using a phone and a tablet, and that made a whole, you know, really cheap. You know, if we drop it, not going to kill us. But I love the participation we got. And you know, the next stage was to actually work out where the forklift would load and unload, as they built a timber structure and then overlaid the AR object back on top of it. So it looked like it was there, but then we could see how high the pallets, and it was just that ongoing improvement. And it actually led to some small design changes, which, happy days, before you've spent the money.
Yeah,
you've actually used technology to enable that discussion, you know, to your point around risk, but also around how people think they're going to use it, which I love that it's more in depth, right? You're getting a chance to have an in-depth conversation much earlier on than you normally would.
Yeah. And you talk about your four Ds, which I love. The four Ds that I apply to planning is four-dimensional planning around, you know, pitch, roll, yaw, the actual three dimensions, the fourth dimension being time. So a way to enhance, say, that use case and that scenario that you talked about would be the ability to extrapolate out a time-based scenario on that. So what would the movement of that factory look like? And be able to, you know, have a slider bar which goes backwards and forwards and shows how things would work, and shows what that the people and plant interaction, what happens when the sunset goes down and the lights change. All of that can happen in 4D spatial planning. I predict that we will see, we are already seeing it in construction. I was at one of the majors last week, one of the major construction companies, and they have a 4D spatial planning division specifically for that purpose. You are able to view all phases of a construction project, done through so the 3D spatial plus time. And that's all done to improve the ability to confirm the layout of a floor plan, even something as interesting as what would happen as a tree grows over time, and will it start to impact the layout of the lighting inside a floor, because now the tree's grown up so much that now the conditions inside that office layer is too dark for the ambient lighting conditions, so they need to change things. It's really, really interesting 4D spatial planning and the role that health and safety professionals and practitioners can have about being able to elicit worker insights and get far more collaboration around that discussion, I think is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I think, you know, from a risk management point of view, the more we can design out risk at that early stage, the huge ongoing benefit that it has Because everything that we can't design out early, that we have to do after the fact, is always going to have what we call a knock-on effect or a knock-on potential.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think, you know, concepts like safety by design aren't new. But what is different is using some of these new views, particularly around, you know, what does normal work look like? What does successful work look like? What doesn't make sense to worker when they have to set up that machine? What doesn't make sense to them when they have to clean that machine? What doesn't make sense when they have to, you know, doing a clearing or a jam? The contextualization through it, seen through the eyes of the worker, becomes really important.
Yeah.
And sadly, in most cases, they are the last people to be consulted, not the first.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think this is the, with some of the new view concepts, particularly around worker insights and going and having discussions with the workers on the ground, there takes a skill set around questioning, of course, from the practitioner asking those questions and making sure that they're able to build trust and ask curious questions that are going to elicit appropriate insights and valuable insights. There appears to be a group of practitioners that are able to do that. So what I have been observing with some of the new view philosophies is that it's as good as the practitioner, because once the practitioner leaves, that approach and that skill moves with them. So I believe that there's a role for technology to scale out some of that knowledge transfer. It's never going to be perfect, but I think that that's something that what I've observed is currently missing in a lot of the new view literature about the role of technology enablement in being able to scale out some of those approaches. Just also to validate the assumptions that are being made with quality data, so that we can be a little bit more evidence-based around those practices, not just ethnographic research outcomes, but something a little bit more solid. So the one other thing I'll just quickly add into the work design, we've been talking about a physical work design interaction there. There's a lot we need to be looking at around the psychosocial risk element of work design, which I think is probably not going to be something that an AR-related experience will do, but taking a look more holistically about the negative role and the positive role that technology has in the workplace, I think is something that I am observing as being missing in this whole conversation. So a few things around work design and also around users. So tech to enable new view, good things, but also in relation to work design, I have not seen enough dialogue come out of the new view space around the role that technology has about the negative aspects of work design as well, and how technology should be enabling human flourishing, not causing a lot of the challenges that we have seen with Zoom, MS Teams, other remote collaboration tools and things like that have really changed work for potentially the negative as well.
I totally agree that Zoom and what doesn't matter what platform you use. I'm platform independent here.
Yeah, let's not. We're not dissing the brand.
Yeah. No. I think it's the approach. I spent some time up in the US, and during COVID, we were trying to do it via conferencing, video conferencing. I'll generically call it that. And it was really hard. And that's where I actually worked out that, well, I didn't work it out, but one of the technology we tried was AR, because we couldn't get there to explain it. And we were using, you know, everything we were doing was in 3D models. So it was very easy to convert. And then we could give it to them, the construction teams up there in the US, and they could actually have it in their office and see what it looked like in full size. And it changed the dynamic. The other thing was that if we ever sent them a physical sample, it took 4.5 weeks to get there and $2,000 to ship it. So yeah. From a business point of view, it made a lot of sense. And, you know, we've built on that that with a range of different clients that we've been talking to. But I just want to go back to your point about, you know, IT, new view and safety. And I see a lot of companies out there saying, oh, I know we're putting in this new safety management system. We're going to collect all this data. And to me, it looks like it's sort of like collecting stuff that's already happened. And it's not really helping. It's not going to predict anything, that's for sure. I don't know who goes to look at it. And so I was really interested in your point around capturing it, and when the practitioner leaves, what does that look like? How do we help the organization transition over that movement of a practitioner leaving and making sure that sustainability is built in somewhere as much as you can with technology? Because in the book, Brent and I, or the white paper, I talk about organizational amnesia, because organizations forget. The humans remember. If there's a bad incident, the humans always remember as long as they're still in the organization. But the organizations have no way of recalling it, remembering it, and they're quite often destined. And we use an example where they had the same accident 7 years earlier, and they repeated it in a different location. And I think that goes to your point.
Yeah, look, the organizations that are truly learning organizations and want to be able to learn practitioner independent, so not have to have a learnings teams, facilitators that have gone through all of these trainings and have, you know, these fabulous people that are able to go out and be really good at asking questions on site, etc. I think we have the ability to strip a lot of that individual component of moving forward and getting back to the data life cycle. And data can be a conversation. It doesn't have to be a zero and a one or a text entry into a spreadsheet. So the data life cycle is the foundation of the ability to scale out New View philosophy or any sort of approach that you're wanting to take, because when the data lifecycle effectively is collecting data, how you collect it, is it real time, is it offline, is it video, is it images, is it text, is it speech, is it a sensor, is it biometric? So it's what is it, how's it collected, then where is it stored, how is it stored, how accessible is it? We get a lot of interesting information that we collect data from work sites. And what I would, people that will listen to this, I can almost guarantee that the really good insights are not captured in the really accessible locations. They're then captured and put in something like a little spreadsheet somewhere. The really good stuff goes in the spreadsheet, which isn't widely accessible. Maybe your big EHS management system, that probably is the main cause of all of your issues, is where you can get all of this stuff, but none of it's actually meaningful. The meaningful stuff's not accessible. So how you store, how you access, then how you process that data, aggregate, average, correlations, will then enable you to be able to do, you know, descriptive statistics and predictive models. And then how you then analyze, so how you describe, how you do predictive and preventative analytics off that. So I would hazard a guess that almost everyone on the call, that or anyone that's listening to this, I would say close to 100% won't have a data lifecycle strategy as it relates to health and safety.
No.
And if they spent time doing that, and the objective is learning, operational learning or transfer of learning, by understanding the structure of your data lifecycle and how that interacts with other data sets, so operational data, human resources data, you know, absence of leave, you know, leave data, hours worked, you know, different types of contractors' hours worked, all of those things, if they're able to be structured in such a way, stored, accessed, processed, and analyzed well, then you can start eliciting phenomenal insights that have a lot of sustainability and longevity. So call to action is about being very clear about the foundations of where your data comes from and all of that, that whole life cycle. Otherwise, I just don't believe that you can scale out your amazing work that you might be doing as an individual or as a really good, powerful team, because once one or two or three of you leave, it'll just go back to whatever the mess that it was before. That's my raw view on what I'm observing with NewVue. That's not strategically looking at technology. And I'm frustrated when I look at the course content for the different, HOP, NewVue, Safety 2 programs and initiatives to get people upskilling on that. It's void of foundational structure around data. And I think that's the biggest criticism that I have and the biggest improvement option for organizations that are going down that path.
Okay, it's interesting, Cameron, because I mean, we're not in the training business, because at the end of the day, we felt very early on that we wanted to focus in creating that embedding and sustainability framework, and that it has to be evidence-based rather than going in, taking a whole lot of concepts on and you know, giving it a go. And I think what you're talking about there is a little bit what we spoke about in our book on everyday learning, is that organizations will always be limited in how much resource they can apply. Like, you can go out and you can learn every single day, but you've only got so many hours in a day to do that. And the issue that we've got at the moment is that most of these things that we're doing are intervention-based. They're driven by the organization. The organizations need to do that. And what we're saying is that for the organization to get that bigger picture, it needs to be worker-led. And the organization needs to support that. And I think there's two components. And what we've been experimenting with is the use of AI technology to not only listen to what people say, but also to look at how they say it. And AI is really good at, we call it showing the difference between the forest and the trees, looking for those patterns or those emergent clusters of things. Because humans are very bad at that. Humans are very bad at seeing those patterns. But once a human understands the pattern, humans are really good at then looking at that context and looking at that underlying narrative that sits below it. And that's where AI is not great. So we've been trying to look at ways of shifting systems from being assessment-based or evaluative-based more into what we call critical appraisal based. Because the critical appraisal component is where the learning happens for the workers. And that can lead those work groups to create those critical thinking skills. And by recognizing that workers are the solution to the problem, then how do we get those worker insights from those people so that the organization can try and make sense of it? Because right now I'm seeing tech being used to do more assurance and verification. So that's tech for interventions.
Yeah, that's lazy digitalization of existing processes. So there's been no thinking. The biggest issue I have around that is digitally assisted workflow, where when a piece of equipment gets installed into a workplace, it'll have a set of machine-based startup procedures, maintenance procedures. You know, there'll be certain steps. Make sure you do this first, and then do this, and then check that, and it has to be within these ranges and these limits. They're quite prescriptive and they're appropriate. And you know, it's the appropriate sequence to do something. They're typically provided by the manufacturer, and then the organization will digest that and wrap some stuff around it, maybe pad it out with a bunch of things that have to happen. They would have been big manuals before, you know. And then what we saw, what I call lazy digitization, is they've gone and taken that and put it into an electronic way of viewing that information. And then they're probably stored in a work order management solution to be able to access based on that piece of equipment. So there'll be an asset hierarchy, then there'll be the procedure, and I'll do it. But there was never any thinking about how you would transfer one medium to another. And that's only just continued to get worse and worse and worse. So we've basically just continued to, nobody's taken time to reimagine the way that that could happen. So that whole approach just is super frustrating. And when it comes to health and safety work, so, you know, audits, the typical things, checklist type assessments and risk assessments and things, they have just been taken from however they were done and then put into a digital format. And effectively a tablet is basically exactly that. It's a stone tablet, but it's just an electric one. It hasn't changed since, you know, it's like papyrus. Mm-hmm. It's not, it really isn't anything
like,
exactly the same.
Like in a chisel, yep.
Yeah, so so when I talk about technology, so safety tech, I am not talking about digital checklists and health and safety data capture solutions like the, you know, health and safety management system softwares. That is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about any technology that has the ability to improve the design, experience, and safety of work. It ultimately needs to improve the role of the human. That's what safety tech is about. It's about improving the ability for the human to flourish. And that needs to be the ultimate goal. I can go into my philosophies on this for a lot more, but I guess to summarize very, very briefly, the role of the health and safety professional in relation to this is more of a concierge. So the role that the new view practitioner would have as it relates to technology is as a concierge, like a hotel concierge. You would come to the hotel concierge and ask questions about your objectives and what you're trying to achieve. And the hotel concierge, in this case, the health and safety concierge, will provide you with guidance and take you through some suggested things that will provide you with delight and give you a good engaging experience and support you in your objectives. So it's the worker's objective. It's the worker's journey. It's their experience. And the health and safety practitioner is a concierge to enable that to happen.
So you're saying technology on demand. You're saying that technology, when they've got a health and safety problem or an issue that they're facing, that they've got something that's going to say, well, they can say, here's my problem and here's the suggested way of attacking that.
So yeah, it's not as much as transactional, hey, I've got a problem, here's your solution. It's more experiential than that. So it's about, the objective is more about the role being more, you know, when you know that when you go to a really good quality hotel, that anything's possible. I just need to go to the concierge and get some guidance. But ultimately I've got the bits that I need. You know, I want to take my kids to a theme park, but I don't know which one and I'm not sure exactly how. But it's my experience, and the concierge will curate that experience for me to support me in that journey. So it may be transactional. Yes, I just want a basic recommendation. What are your options? Or it could be, help me craft the experience together. And I think if you can be called upon as a concierge, then you are really enabling flourishing in the workplace. And I think reimagining the role of the health and safety professional as a concierge, as the ability to communicate across groups, I think that makes the role of the professional quite exciting as well. But you need a basic digital literacy. You need a basic level of knowledge and skills around a variety of different business processes, and you need to have a common vision. But I think all of the new view elements of, you know, people are the solution, whatever else other new view things are, you can let me know what they are. You know, the capacity to respond and the capacity to learn and all of those things. The concierge role is an enabler of that, using technology to scale, because you can serve one individual, but you can't serve an entire organization without having technology enablers. And they're not checklists and they're not EHS management systems specifically. They could be, but that's not it's not the purpose. It's about, yeah.
Facilitation of change, because it's not about, so the problem at the moment we see a lot is that it's about control and ownership. And just in safety, we talk about, you know, we use this language, hierarchy of controls, okay? In risk management, that's not the language that we use in risk. We talk about mitigations, you know, transfers, things like that. But there's this high level thing about control, and with control comes ownership.
Yes.
And to that, we've built a society of practitioners based on expertise and knowledge as being the way to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see, Cameron, the work that we do, trying to get practitioners to realize that they need to be moving between these two mental models of facilitating versus expert.
Yeah.
And it's difficult, because as you know, when we see stuff or hear stuff, it becomes obvious to us, and the fix becomes obvious as well.
Yeah.
But that doesn't create sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Sustainability comes from the group who face the problem to be involved in the actual finding of the solution.
Yeah.
Hence why learning teams have been so powerful, because if you spend all your time understanding it, the solution will fall out by itself.
Yeah.
Safety professional that has some compliance aspect to their job, because organizations haven't made that jump yet to let go of, I want to look at my LTIs, are they down, we must be doing better mentality. And there's lots of, so you've still got that, but you're saying that with the safety professional that they need to be digitally literate to start building or using data in a much more holistic way, but also pulling data from different sources. Because at the moment, it's very much about collecting data. And I don't, you know, the people I talk to, or, you know, they collect it. I don't know what happens to it. It just seems to sit in a database somewhere, you know, and that just seems like dumb. First of all, it's costly, because you've just spent a whole lot of money on a piece of software that collects data. Cool. We can use a spreadsheet for that. But we've spent $1 million putting in this really cool new EHS piece of software. I don't see a lot of value in that. But I'm trying to, you know, I'm really interested in that point of yours about, it's all the data coming in. It's all the data points. It's the, how do we use that? And then to your point of the concierge, serve that to the people that are looking for it at the time they're looking for it in a timely manner.
Yeah, so there's the data side and the ability to obtain insights and scale out insights. And then you've got the actual technology that is going to improve the safety of work. And I call those, rather than the hierarchy controls, I call it augmented mitigations. So the I have created a technology augmented hierarchy of controls, just because that's the language a lot of people like to use. But ultimately, it's augmented mitigations. So right now, there isn't a lot of ability for the professional, the health and safety practitioner professional, to be confident in themselves that they're able to suggest augmented mitigations, because they just don't have the literacy. So what happens is you'll see other parts of the organization will bypass the health and safety professional, mainly because of a compliance mindset that the health and safety professional has, particularly if they're not practicing new view type approaches. is they will constrain constrain innovation and constrain control of like mitigation augmentation, because they won't know how that could be implemented. So again, if you can kind of bear with my line here, and it's a little bit messy because it's an evolving concept in my mind, and still seeing the fruits of how this works in practice. The role of the concierge is to transfer knowledge and operational learning and continue to build on their repository of things, so that that can be done through data. So that you need to be able to have real-time access and information to that, and build on learnings and continue to. So a very, very good experience for a frontline work crew will be that they have a place to go to access learnings, to access, so that they don't have to continually feed the machine and get nothing out of it. So what happens with worker insights, unfortunately, this is what I've been observing, is you ask a lot of the workers, but they don't get a lot in return. Because the organization, and particularly the safety professional, does not know how to consume, structure, process, analyze, store, transfer, and have readily accessible that information for future abilities. They then may not have the ability to sustainably augment the mitigations and demonstrate the effectiveness of that, because it's just not strategically part of how health and safety practitioners have worked. So it takes some effort to understand the digital landscape, so that the organization's digital strategy, which will drastically impact worker experience, cybersecurity is a massive component of what technology organizations are looking at right now. And that is a huge user experience issue. So multiple sign-ons, multiple factor authentication, all of this stuff to be able to get in and access something causes micro trauma every time someone has to do that. Or I can't log on to my computer, I've lost my password, and all of this stuff. It is very consuming to the workforce. That is a result of a technology strategy around cybersecurity, which is massively in focus at the moment with the data breaches we've seen.
Yeah.
So the pathway that the organization is taking around technology strategy directly impacts worker health and safety.
Yeah.
What health and safety practitioner, new view or otherwise, is actively looking at that. That's the type of thing I'm talking about in terms of digital literacy and technology-enabled safety strategy, digital safety strategy, understanding the business strategy, the technology strategy, and making sure that the health and safety strategy is not some thing off on the side that's just done independently, because that's what I'm currently observing. The commonality of the common thread here is data, because that's what will drive the ability to converse and have insights across the organization. And then the last thing is the actual safety of work to augment the mitigations that are in place. So that could be removing people from the line of fire, increase, robotics and automation, whatever those things might be, to physically change the risk profile. That combination, the concept that I have in my mind to be able to have augmented mitigations to improve the actual frontline safety of work, the ability to transfer worker insights, and the ability to have a digitally enabled strategy requires a reimagined role profile of the safety professional, which I call the concierge. There's a few dimensions of that. That's the messy thinking that I have in this space, and putting that into practice requires coaching and contextual thinking in different organizations. So it takes a little bit of effort, but I'm definitely starting to see some pretty awesome results. And the metrics for success are far more around delight, engagement, trust. They're not, numbers generally. They're more scaled indicators of human experience and user experience. So they're user experience indicators rather than numbers. The numbers come and the numbers will move as they do, but the key performance indicators are more around like the, you know, the fire, is it, you know, the fire indicators, bushfire indicators in Australia will be like, it's extremely low today or extremely high. You can kind of get this gauge of where you're roughly at.
Welcome to Safety Differently Merchandise, the premium sponsor for the Practice of Learning Teams podcast show. Our curated lines of inspirational clothing, headwear, cups, stationery and more at Safety Differently Merchandise is befitting of your Safety Differently journey. I am Arthur Taylor, Chief Designer. I have spent decades on Savile Row and honored to bring my talents for all fine purveyors and devotees of HOP, Learning Teams, Safety Differently, Safety 2, and the New View. Please visit the store and purchase our fine goods at safetydifferentlymerch.com. And now, back to the show.